Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. My name is Bronwyn Ely and I'm here with fellow Booktopian Tracy Mills. And we are sitting across from Jacqueline Moriarty, who is here to chat about her new book, The Extremely Inconvenient Adventures of Bronte Nettlestone. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I have to say, I love this book. I could not put it down.
Ditto.
Right from the first page. I've always found your writing really engaging and interesting, and it just sort of grabs you and keeps you reading and reading and reading. So hands down, I absolutely love this book. But it's your first foray into middle grade. How is it different from writing sort of YA or adult books?
I just need to think about that praise for a moment.
Sorry. Yeah. Really lovely.
Thank you. I really like to hear that. Thank you. It was a really different experience. I've said this before and I think it's true. It was the closest to the kind of book that I've always wanted to write. So the kind of book that I loved when I was a child is what I'm always trying to angle towards writing. And I felt when I was writing this as if I was in that world, as if I felt like I was in the mind space of that I had wanted to get into. And so, but I also made a decision to write this differently from my other books, because I'd written maybe one or two adult books I've written, and mainly young adult. And with each book that I've written, I've done a plan. And with every book, the plan has got longer and longer and longer. So with the trilogy that I just wrote, which was the fantasy trilogy, and I knew it was going to be a trilogy before I started.
Yeah.
So I did a 250-page plan for that, which took me a year to write before I started writing the books.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And but when I used to write stories from when I was little.
Yeah.
And the stories that I wrote then, I never planned. Obviously, you don't plan. When you're seven, you don't write it, even if the teacher's
I would have been impressed if you did.
Yeah, no. So I just, as I've been writing all these books with the plans getting bigger and bigger and more out of control, and sometimes with me thinking, is this really planning or is it procrastination? That's what I'm never sure about how much of this is necessary. And in a way, I was almost like I was doing a draft in plan form. And so I decided with this one that I wanted it to be, to write it in the way I used to write it, and to try to get into the mood of those books and that writing that I used to do. So I wrote it without a plan, and I never knew what was going to happen from one chapter to the next.
Okay. That comes across a bit in the book. One of the things I liked about it was the pacing. Like, it's got a really good pace to it. Like, this is happening. And it keeps you interested. It keeps you wanting to know what's going to happen to this little girl next. What are the other possibilities in this world? Because that's one of the things I like about the world that you've built in this, is that almost anything is possible.
And so many amazing things did happen. I mean, the kinds of characters you introduced just opened up more and more doors, like the dragons and the water spirits and all that, you know.
And the idea of family and getting to know family, I think, is something that sort of comes across, because it gives, throughout the book, Bronte gets to meet people that she kind of knew but didn't know very well. But by the end of the book, she's kind of gotten to know that those family members that she just really hadn't.
Well, I love how you draw the connections of her learning about her family and also about her parents that she never knew through the little gifts that she gives them, because each gift comes with a little story.
Oh, good.
They were all, and it was just, I felt like by the time we got to the end, we knew her parents and we knew a little more about her and where she came from, and about how the family sort of worked together and how much they cared about each other.
Good.
So it's a really good way to sprinkle it through.
Good. Yeah. Well, I just started with a structure, and that helped me I did have the structure which enabled me not to plan it in a way, because I knew from the beginning, so it's a 10-year-old girl who's receives word that her parents have been killed by pirates, and they've left her instructions in their will that she has to go and visit. She's been raised by one aunt because her parents ran away to have adventures when she was a baby, and now her parents have left her with instructions to go and visit her 10 other aunts. So by starting with that structure, it just meant that each section that I wrote was Bronte arriving at another aunt's house. Mm-hmm. So I really let Bronte tell the story.
Yeah.
So I was waiting to find out with her what each aunt would be like.
For her.
For her, from her eyes. So to see to meet the aunt through her eyes. So it was that where people talk about, you know, sometimes writing is really hard work and you're forcing your way through it and you're dragging it into being. With this one, I just felt as if for a lot of the book, I only wrote it when I was in exactly the right mood to write it. So I was writing it in the evenings and at night time, and which is quite different because I write for a living. So I see my writing usually as a job, and now you have to sit down and do your writing. So with this one was more the kind of magical escapism that writing used to be for me, and that was the experiment, which meant that I did a lot more editing than usual afterwards. So it was very much a first draft when I'd finished. Even though the basic plot and structure were all there, and Bronte and the characters were all there, it meant I did more work than usual going back over it. But it was that when people talk about writing being in the zone and writing, you know, following, waiting to see what story will unfold before, how the story unfolds before you, like a treasure map. And I always think that is rubbish. You people don't know what you're talking about when you do that. But that's what was happening. When I was writing it. So, and sometimes I just left it for weeks without going back to it because I didn't feel like I could hear Bronte's voice.
It does feel almost effortless as you read it. Like, there are books I've read where you do feel like the author has forced it, and that sometimes doesn't bring the same kind of joy to when you're reading it as it, when it's like just flows. But
everything felt really like it was purposefully put there, and it felt like you enjoyed it, and it felt that Bronte was enjoying what she was, because she's writing this to us as well, you know, so it felt like everything that was there for a purpose, and it wasn't, didn't feel like, oh, I have to write this scene now, it was, no, I want to write this scene because this is important and this is part of it. And some of the chapters were very, very short, and I loved that, those little snippets, and then we'll move on to the next thing that happened to her and her exciting life.
Good.
I mean, Bronte is, 10 years old when the book starts, although when she's actually writing it, she's 12. But she's so resilient and independent, a 10-year-old. How did you come up with her as your main character? Because, I mean, in my experience, most 10-year-old girls that I know would find this sort of adventure overly intimidating and too scared to take it on. So,
and she was so brave, and she had so much wit and
so matter of fact, almost like things that probably would scare most people. She's kind of
she would just call it and be like, "Well, this
takes it in stride." Yeah, getting on a dragon.
She's like, "All right,
okay.
I guess that's how I should get there. Probably for the best."
So, how did you come up with Bronte?
Well, she kind of came. She just emerged onto the page. But I think it was also because she's been raised by her aunt, who is a very proper and a little remote and quite stern, and the butler, who's also very proper and correct, and by a governess. So she's not spent much time around children, and she's had to look after herself, and her parents haven't been around all her life. So she's become resilient as she's grown up, I think, and independent. And in a way, I wanted her, in the course of the book, to experience what it's like to be a child and make friends with other children,
and
be a bit more playful. And
you got that sense that she'd not really had any adventure until now, and that was was that part of the reason why her parents sent her on this journey? And you even brought that up in it. Did my parents want to put me out on this adventure to experience and to experience life a little more like they did? It was really great to see her letting her hair down and having fun with, you know, the kids on the cruise ship. I think that might have been my favourite bit, and, you know, Taylor and Billy, and just, you know, watching those adventures. And not all, like, happy things. Like, even how she, you know, they come across the injured boy, and again, what you were pointing out is that a lot of 10-year-olds would just sit there and cry. But she was like, no, let's do this, let's help him.
Yeah. Well, I wonder also, because her parents are adventurers, that's a kind of part of her that she's inherited from them, but she hasn't been able to take advantage of that part of herself yet. So that's kind of starting to bubble up, the fact that she's an adventurer. my niece, who's 8, read the book, and once she started, she asked her mum, when I turn 10, can I please go on an unsupervised adventure?
Oh dear.
Actually, that's something I probably would have said at that sort of an age.
Bronte got to do this, why can't I?
All the kids' books tend to be adventures, like the ones that really stay with you and that you love. Like, I'm thinking Enid Blyton.
Even just Harry Potter, everyone's like, 11, where's my Hogwarts letter?
Yeah.
You know? They'll be like, 10, where's my adventure? Like, Bronte's adventure.
I find it interesting that all of these really popular kids' books always start out with the parents either dying or being completely just absent in some way or another. And it's all about the child going on an adventure and having to cope with various things that...
Well, if most stories, if the parents are there, they're not going to get to go on that adventure because the parents will be protective and say, no, you stay here, you're too young. And to not having those guardians there just means that they can go and do so much more and grow as people so much more, earlier than a lot of other kids will.
Exactly. And you need that. I think that you often see that challenge for the writer is how do we get the parents and the authority figures out of the picture so the kids can be in charge. Exactly, without killing them and also without making it unrealistic. Because often, you read those books and you think, the children have just witnessed a murder or something and they're trying to sort it out. And you have that frustration. Mm. Just go and tell an adult about this. And that drives you crazy. So trying to figure out a way to make it plausible that the parents are not around.
I really liked how you did it because you had that initial thing where, her aunt and the butler were like, oh, no, we're coming with you. And Eliza went, sorry, you can't, the fairy cross stitch, And that was a great reason for her to go on her own, And so you sorted that really easily. I don't know, it might not have been easy for you figuring it out, but it seemed like, oh, of course, but of course. We're in a magical world. Anything can happen and you can have fairy cross stitch.
Exactly.
And it's not done in a way that's depressing or anything. It's sort of fairly matter of fact at the beginning when she talks about her parents being killed by pirates. And then she goes on to have all these adventures and all this fun, and I think that's the overwhelming sort of takeaway from the book is this is just fun. It is the ultimate in escapism,
Did you have a particular aunt that was your favourite to write?
Oh, that's a good question. I liked all the aunts. I loved the two aunts on the cruise ship because I like how they were, I like that they are captaining a cruise ship together, so I like the kind of woman who is an expert and a strong figure, but also they were a pair of aunts who cruised who captained the cruise ship together. But they like to make jokes and have a lot of fun and laugh a lot and tell stories. So
they were the captain and there was a lot of respect from all the passengers. But at the same time, they all loved the aunts as well. Like they're really personable and fun as well.
That's what I liked about them. Yeah. And I liked the aunt who was the queen. Yes, kingdom too. I liked writing her a lot.
I love that she got it as it was a job application, and not she married into the royal bloodline. That was great.
I love the whole premise of that kingdom built on music.
Oh, yes.
That's just, I could see so much more. Like I wanted to know more about that. Actually, there's a lot of parts of the book where I would love to learn more about the little bits of the world, like the dragon side and things like that. This is a standalone, so are you planning to write more in this world?
I would, when I was first writing it, I was imagining it as a standalone, as you say, and that's how I wrote it. But when I finished it, I thought I would like to go back to that world because, you say, I felt like we just visited little parts of it. And especially once you draw a map of a place, I'm terrible at drawing maps. I drew a map, and then the artist, Kelly Canby, made it into a beautiful artistic map. And as soon as you see a map, you want to go back there, I think.
You see, well, the unexplored area in the corner.
Exactly.
And,
yes.
And you created such a rich world with so many interesting characters. You can't just leave it there, and we don't want you to.
Thank you.
We were discussing it earlier. We were like, we want to know what happens with these people. And so that would be really exciting to go back to that world.
Yeah. Good. So I am writing one now. I'm nearly finished, I think. A kind of another book, not about Bronte, but about other characters in a different part of this world. And Bronte is going to show up halfway through the book. But this is set... Oh, no, I can't give away too much about it. I won't give away too much about it.
Making us wait.
completely different characters and a whole different part of the world. And then I like to go back to Bronte in the third book.
Mm-hmm. There's so many characters in this book that could almost have their own stories branching off. When you read it, you'll just be caught up in all these different adventures that Bronte has. But
everybody else had adventures to get to her, like Alejandro. I mean, what happened to him? I mean, you get little snippets of it, but he himself is such a fascinating character.
Yeah. And like the boy cousins that fight and carry on a bit. They have the football game with the thing. I thought that there's so much more we could learn about those characters.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Even
thank
the boarding
you.
School.
The three sisters. So could you imagine sisters? All the little naughty things they'd get up to at school? I just had this feeling.
Like, yeah, I feel like it would be so much fun to be at that boarding school.
I know, and be friends with them and just go up and do things, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so you think three anymore, or are you just sort of going to play it by ear?
I'll see what happens
after
that.
Happens?
Yeah.
Do you have a preference now? Now you've written across so many different age ranges. Do you find that it's more challenging to write the middle grade, or do you have a preference?
That's a good question. I think it depends on my mood. When I got about halfway through this one, I decided I want to make it into a book, so I'll stop doing it in my weird, drifty edges of life, moonlight, starlight, spacey way. And I started writing it every morning for a while,
yeah.
But I still did my weird thing in, because I decided I'm going to write it in a different cafe every day. So okay. I went out with my laptop and went to, and I, there weren't quite enough different cafes in my neighborhood to have a different one for it. And also I kept getting drawn back to the chocolate shop, which is my favorite place to write. So a lot of it was written in the chocolate shop, but most of the chapters were written in a variety of cafes around my, within walking distance of my home. And then in the afternoon, I worked on an adult novel that I've just finished also. And that was almost perfect for me, to be able to be in that world of children and magic in the morning, and then to think more like a grown-up and have grown-up themes and
how do you
sex and bad language and all that wickedness.
How do you keep all those different voices straight in your head? Because, I mean, I love the Madeline, Colours of Madeline series. And I loved Have a Bed Made of Buttermilk Pancakes. And the voices are very different from, say, the Bronte Middlestone book. How do you keep that straight? Because I imagine that would be quite difficult when you're writing across different age ranges.
I think sometimes it's difficult with when I'm writing, because usually I write young adult, and I would like to do a bit more of that again. So, I like doing all three different genres, which is probably not very good professionally. You're supposed to stick to one thing and... It'd be anyway, but I found that it was quite easy moving between a children's book and an adult book, because they are quite
so different,
far away from each other, and especially because both of them were written in first person voice. So it was my adult book, there's a grown up woman who's 35 telling the story, and this one, there's a 12-year-old girl talking about what happened when she was 10. So they're completely different. And the adult one's in the real world, and the kids one is in its imaginary world. So to me, that was quite easy to separate them. Sometimes when I'm writing young adult and adult at the same time, I can be worried about them. Mm. They can move close together. Because I get to know the characters before I start writing, usually, I don't have trouble differentiating between the characters or voices. It's more that, you know, when you walk around in everyday life, and something happens, you see something in the newspaper, or you overhear a conversation, and you think, I'm going to put that in my book, then the difficulty sometimes is choosing which book to put it in.
Right.
It could actually work for my young adult book, but it could also work for me, and then they are grappling, fighting between them, which one gets to have it. But again, that didn't happen with kids and adult. They're so far away that it was clear which book it belonged in.
It sounds like fun. I mean, it sounds like it gives you an opportunity to just embrace different aspects by writing different age ranges
exactly.
at one time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and when you write your younger books for your kids, and do you call back to things that you remember from your childhood, and to try and get in the mindset of a young kid, or do you talk to your kids, or do you go and people watch and then see how kids act with their parents and things like that? Because I, for example, couldn't think to how to write a kid's book, really, and I don't really remember how I thought as a child.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. I think I did a little bit of all of those things, and I definitely tried to imagine myself how I would feel going into a lawyer's office and hearing from two lawyers about what your parents are instructing you to do, what I would think of these two men telling me what to do. So I tried to put myself in. I can remember a lot more about my childhood and teenage years than I can about what happened in the last 10 years. That's all blurred together. So, so I find it pretty easy, I think, to go back and think there. But I have no idea where I put my glasses or my keys most of the time. And definitely looking at other kids and my own child and the things that are, and that when you have kids around, then that triggers memories yourself,
yeah.
I think. So
yeah.
listening to him and the things that worry him helps me to remember, yes, that's what it's like to be a child.
And so you said you wrote when you were younger as a kid. Do you have any of your old, you know, books or novellas or from when you were a kid?
Yeah, I do. I wonder why they're in a box somewhere. And sometimes I think I should get them out.
I was going to say, have you ever thought to like compare what you used to write when you were a child to now writing, as
now.
A child and see if there's any kind of similarities? Because I think that would be really interesting.
It would be, but
yeah.
It sort of breaks my heart a bit because I thought I was a genius then.
And you don't want to ruin it.
Then I go, no, you are hopeless. So.
Yeah. I read a kid's book when I was a kid as well, and I've lost it, and I kind of don't want to find it because I feel like, yeah, it'll be terrible. It will be terrible. But,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've recently been talking about our favourite books that we read as kids and the books that have stayed with us. What are your favourite kids' books, ones that have stayed with you into adulthood?
The ones that have stayed with me are Joan Aiken and the Wolves of Willoughby Chase series.
Yeah.
And in some stretch, some of the books that I read as an adult, I wish I'd read as a child because I love them so much and I could imagine. But so Diana Wynne Jones, I didn't read till I was grown up, and I just adore her books. I'm crazy about them. But the ones that, when I was a child, the Enes, but the Phoenix and the Carpet and the Railway Children, Five Children and It and the Railway.
Yeah.
Especially the Phoenix in the Cup, that their magical world.
Yeah.
That's definitely stayed with me. And Enid Blyton and the faraway tree.
I think that's on almost every one of us here's like childhood favourites list.
Really?
And it's so lovely seeing it come back. I've recently been reading it to my nieces and nephews, and they kind of are loving it. And
that's
I actually listened to them on audio.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, which was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like I miss out because I don't really remember much from my childhood. Things like that. I don't remember most of the books I read. And I wasn't a very big reader anyway, but I wish I'd had, you know, a book like yours.
Oh, thank you.
Because I can just imagine how great it would be to read as a kid and how fun. And I can't wait to give this to someone a bit younger, whether it be my kid in 10 years or, you know, a little cousin or something. Because it's one of those books you have to share around.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the book is out next week.
Is it? I don't know what month we're in. I think
October.
We're in September.
Yes. It's
okay.
Nearly October. Next
okay.
week
I think
October.
It's October release.
Okay.
So
end of October. Yeah.
It'll be available from Booktopia.
Yeah.
Have signed copies.
Signed copies are limited, so get in quick. But you can continually get it on the website and all of Jacqueline's other books. On our website, and we say buy them because they're good. You trust us.
So thank you so much for coming in.
It's
just been an absolute delight to read this book and meet you again.
And podcast listeners, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Even on our website, it won't really do it justice, but it's shiny and it's hardback and it's got incredible illustrations and a really cute map and everything. So it just will look great.
And the illustrations are by Kelly Canby, who's an artist. Every time I got sent a copy of sent one of these illustrations, I cried because I couldn't believe how beautiful it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is the most beautiful book I've ever seen.
Perfect Christmas gift for any child.
Or yourself.
Yes.
We just got it. We don't care how old we are. So it's good for everyone. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.